Welcome to Are You a CSI Podcast. I am Raven, and I have seen CSI through and through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and these are my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing the season finale, season 3, episode 23, Inside the Box. Original air date is May 15th, 2003. Director is Danny Cannon. Writers are Anthony E. Zeichert and Carol Mendelson. We bounce around quite a bit in this opening scene. We're like over the burbs. We see like a squad gearing up. We see the Vegas Strip, and then we're inside of a bank. But before we spend more time inside of the bank, Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
Decent Vegas score. We came in at 49.
Okay. 40. There was a lot of shots, like intercutting shots that like lingered for a bit, it felt.
Yeah, there's some good shots. The opening scene only had 2 Vegas Strip shots. The burbs don't count.
So
we didn't get those. But yeah, it was close. I thought we were going to get there. And then there's a pretty quiet period in the middle, and there's a couple scenes at the end, and then there's nothing else at the very, very end. But it was good. Nice. I think that's a pretty healthy amount of Vegas, 49 points.
Yeah, I think that's solid.
Yeah. Especially for a season finale, you know.
Season finale, yep. We had, I don't know if you added any points to this, but we had a few or at least one in the casino. You know, like it had like Vegas vibes to it.
I didn't give any extra Vegas-y
which is fair
points. Yeah. Although I often do in these situations, but a lot of times it was just like where the person was at. It wasn't where the activity was at. So if we were robbing like a casino vault. Instead of a bank vault. We probably would have given it some points. But yeah, that's interesting. I didn't think of that either time watching it. But you're right. We are actually in a casino quite a few times.
Yeah. But that's all right. Before we get to the casino, we're inside of a bank. Lockwood is at said bank. A little boy, Jimmy, is staring at him. He's okay with it. Then that squad that we saw gearing up in the first scene, I labeled them the masked men in black, enter the bank. They just are shooting, like up in the air, but like shooting. They're moving customers around. One of the men brings the manager to the lockbox room. We go back out to the main area of the bank. The mom wants to just get out of there. The mom with the little boy is understandably freaking out, having a really rough go, wants to get out. And while this is happening, we then are also seeing one of the men exploding the lock boxes. We cut back to the mom. She tries to run, which prompts, you know, one of the robbers to turn towards her. So Lockwood pulls out his gun to try to defend her and is shot. And then shortly after, the men all leave.
It's from a seemingly unknown angle at this time. Which we will get to, but it was like, wait, where? They didn't show you what happened. It kind of kept you in the dark on purpose, which made sense later on.
Yeah. So we then have Grissom at the bank, and from the get-go, his hearing is dimmed. Like, he's standing outside the bank. You can already tell his hearing is dim.
Alarm is going off. It should be like deafening.
It should be deafeningly loud, and he can barely, it's like a muffled sound in the background. Catherine walks up behind him and she's talking, but he can't hear her. They then go inside. Jim Brass and David are already there with, well, now Lockwood's body. And we learn that he died, you know, trying to protect a woman and a child. We learn that it appears that he's dead from one bullet wound in the back, and that Grissom ends up walking over to one of the glass sidings, and he believes that the shot that killed Lockwood came from outside, that the shot was from outside in, not inside out.
Yeah, the glass is like, it blows out in the back, the same way like a piece of wood would if you were drilling through it.
Yeah.
And so that directionality of that blowout is into the bank from the outside.
Yeah.
So it's not like a straight bullet that shot through the glass and went out. It's like a bullet must have come from outside into the bank. And, you know, the police don't have any, they never shot any, fired any shots.
Right. So we'll focus on this a little while later. Before then, we have Grissom and Catherine. They're entering the room where all the lockboxes exploded. And they realize as they're looking at how, like, the pattern of, like, where the explosives were set, that the robbers, like, knew what they were going after. This was, like, a targeted attack, not a random, like, oh, let's get as much money as we can and then bounce sort of situation. We go to credits. We come back to Grissom still at the bank. Sarah, Warwick, and Nick enter. Again, they're all muffled. They're talking, but it's all muffled. We then have Jim Brass runs in. He's letting them all know that they found the getaway car and that the driver is dead. So that's not great for that driver, but you know.
Also, very sort of exciting start of the episode. A lot of action.
A lot of action. We're moving. Like, we're moving, shaking, and grooving. There's not a lot of downtime to begin this episode with. So Grissom and Sarah go to process the lockbox room with some funky music in the background. I did think it was strange that, in, you know, just the previous episode, yep. Grissom had to turn down Sarah and be like, let's not get dinner. Let's not pursue a romantic relationship. And then when he's splitting up the team, he's like, Sarah, you're with me. Why, Grissom? Why?
I mean,
put some space between you and Sarah.
Have I ever made bad personal decisions to spend time with a person that I liked and wanted to be around even when I couldn't? I unfortunately have to say yes. So I think this is probably a likely outcome. Although Grissom is in many ways like the iconic logical person, right? Non-emotional person.
Right, right.
So if anything, I think what we're seeing is like his internal emotional compulsion to want to spend time with Sarah, even though he won't allow himself to do that in a non-professional way.
Yeah. Yeah, you could be right. And we later on have a scene with Grissom talking about his non-rationality. So we'll get to that.
Big disappointment at the end of this episode. Ooh, related
okay.
to this.
All right. Okay. We then have Nick's outside. He's examining the cop car. Catherine wants any bullet, like any part of a bullet that can be pulled from this cop car that was struck as part of this exchange. Catherine is then with Jim Brass. They're with the getaway driver who has been nearly decapitated. We then have a very short scene with Doc Robbins extracting the bullet from Lockwood. Nick is pulling bullet fragments from the car. Sarah
sort of
is,
like, you know, they're like doing that reflection kind of thing, right? Where
yes.
It's like as Doc Robbins is removing the bullet from the body, Nick is trying to remove the bullet from the car.
And Sarah's replacing lockboxes, and we're getting more funky music in the background. We then have Warwick talking to Grissom, and the robbers were wearing black face paint, and they also used that black face paint to, like, coat the cameras to block the camera view. But Warwick did find an eyelash in the paint. Doc Robbins then approaches Grissom in the hallway, and, you know, he wanted to personally deliver the bullet that killed Lockwood because he knew Lockwood and thought he was a good person and, you know, wanted to take that extra step. And at least for the, in terms of solving this case, the bullet is well preserved, which is a good thing.
I think this is another great example of, like, they're trying to get Doc Robbins outside the lab.
Yes, this is, I did think about that. I was like, this is a Doc Robbins not confined to the morgue. Like situation
says 10 times we're at 9, so we need one in this episode.
Need one. We gotta hit that quota. We gotta hit the quota of Doc Robbins not being confined to the morgue or wearing the white coat.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, that's the idea, is like get up and something else out and about.
Yeah, yeah. So we then have Grissom with Catherine, and they got the prints on the getaway driver. We learned that it is one Larry Whiting, and he is a valet at the Rampart. So this is a casino owned by Sam Braun. So they need to go talk to Sam Braun.
And you mean he was a valet?
He was. He like was.
Call back to that episode where the husband referred to his wife in the past tense.
In the past tense, yes. Catherine does the appropriate, responsible thing and says to Grissom, I'm not sure if it's a good idea for me to be the one to go talk to Sam Braun because I have a personal relationship with him and I might be compromised. So this is probably not a great idea. And Grissom's like, nah, it's cool.
Which I don't, I think it was in season one. There was a whole episode with Sam and Catherine, and we got the history of them quite a yes. bit. And so, but that, like, all that didn't really come up in that episode, but I don't think, like, it was still his casino. He was as probably adjacent to it as he is now. So I think I was like a little bit kind of like, why, like, obviously we know where the episode's going, but like they made a bigger deal of it now. So it's like, it almost felt like Grissom at that, like when I first watched this, I was like, his response seemed very reasonable. It's like, I mean, it wasn't a problem last time we had an investigation. You were talking to Sam by yourself, you know what I mean? And yeah. He was involved. And so this one seemed okay, but obviously it becomes more important later on. But I think my initial thought was like, why are you more compromised than you were like before? It was kind of like,
but maybe she's, you know, this is seasons later. She's more mature now. Yeah. Right? Like, I just feel like
she's just come off a suspension.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if one of my employees yeah. came to me, not that I work in like law enforcement or investigation, but if one of my employees came to me and was like, hey, I don't, you know, for whatever reason, I don't think it's a good idea for me to like be alone in like this meeting with this person. Yeah. I wouldn't just be like, well, you've been in a meeting with them before, so
oh yeah, yeah,
peace I'll, out. I'll, like
for sure, Grissom should have gone with her. I'm
100% or sent somebody else or something. Just yeah, yeah. This was not handled well. This was a not. Yeah. I feel in like general, Grissom is very obviously preoccupied with something else this episode.
I would say in general, you would like to have two witnesses whenever you're interviewing somebody,
yes,
so that they tell you something you can corroborate it in mm-hmm. court later on.
Yep, yep. So. But he sends her on her way. So she heads over to the casino. She, her and Sam exchange waves. They, you know, she approaches him. They're sitting down. They're talking with one another. He's saying that the name Larry Whiting doesn't ring a bell. And, you know, they're just, and then they're like, you know, having kind of some personal conversations. And Catherine's like, seriously, like, that's like saying that, you know, you were too tired to go home, you know, the nights that you slept with my mother. And he's like, oh, I just wanted to be with like my two best girls. And, you know, they're kind of not, they're sort of like interweaving personal conversations into yeah. this like investigative, which is really only given credence to Catherine saying like, look, I might be compromised when it comes to this person. Like, I probably shouldn't be the one to talk to him.
And he's trying to charm her, like disarm her through
yes.
this nostalgic remembrance, but also simultaneously reminding us, the audience, of this relationship that she's alluding
to. Yeah, because it's been a while since we've had any background on Sam Braun. So I do think you're right that it is serving both purposes in this situation. And they're talking about like another death that was like at a casino, and you know, how the PR department is going to handle this. And he's like, or like how he's going to handle this. And he's like, I have a PR department. Like, it's fine. I'm not worried about it.
A callback to the earlier episode, then I kind of remembered what that was about. And obviously, spoiler alert, this comes up again later on in the episode, the other murder.
Yes. Yes, it does. So we then were with Jim Brass and work that apartment. We soon learn that it's Larry's apartment. And as they are going through his apartment, they find that the money's not there, but the wraps are there from $10,000 from the Rampart. So that's suspicious.
I don't understand where that $10,000 comes from.
Sam like Braun.
I can guess.
Yeah, it's Sam Braun.
Yeah, like a sort
spoiler
of like,
alert. Sam Braun gave them some money, and then we're like, after a job is well done, you get additional money.
Yeah, yeah, like you know, some money to fund it, you know.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. But it was like they never actually
they never confirm. Yeah, they don't. You're right.
So I was like, that was like the second watch through, I was like, oh yeah, whatever I did.
Yeah, you're like, wait a second. Yeah, no, they do.
Really good tip one day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He did a really. They just gave him a spot bonus, like on.
Oh yeah.
Spot on the moment, they were like, "You're doing so good. Here's a $10,000 spot bonus." Yeah.
For another day.
Yeah. So we head over to Ballistics. Grissom is with Bobby. We learned that the gun used to kill Lockwood was a long gun, and they are essentially impossible to trace. You just can't trace them. But cognitively, Bobby is suggesting that the person who wielded this gun was trained by the military.
Yeah. So like you could say like there's a huge number of people in the state of Nevada who could own a gun, and they could even own this gun. But on those people, like if you're just like a person who wants to like shoot guns and have fun, you don't have the level of training it takes to be as accurate
right.
and consistent. As
at such a distance.
Yeah, at a distance. And so this person doesn't just own this gun, but they must have significant training, which realistically, you're a sniper in some sort of armed services or yeah. other military/police situation.
Yep, yep. So that's what they're believing at this time. Nick is back at the bank. He is determining the trajectory of the bullet that killed Lockwood, as well as the one that hit the cop car. This points to, I initially wrote down hotel room /office because I didn't know. And then as soon as he walked in, I'm like, oh, it's an office. But from the outside, I was like, office, hotel room, not quite sure.
I like these upgraded rods with the laser pointers at the end of them.
Yeah, they're pretty high tech. Not the strings. We're not stringing it this time. We're rodding it.
There's a lot of things you have to get right to get it all to line up, but he does the right thing. One of the sort of like questionable things is the car, because they said the car like moved a bunch of feet after it got shot. So they're guessing its location.
They did say that it was dripping oil. Yeah. And so he followed the oil back. Yeah, so yes, it was still like an approximation, but it was like supposedly there was some evidence to back up where it was approximately moved back to.
But the good thing is once you get those two sort of best guesses and they converge into one place, that's a really good confirmation. So that's why I like having those two, like in theory, if you knew exactly where Lockwood was standing and you knew the exact angle to the window, you would 100% be pointing at where that bullet came from. You wouldn't need the car.
Yeah.
But because there could be some variation there, then you get the car, then it kind of gives you this area. The closer those two dots are together, the more likely they are to be correct.
Right.
And so it's kind of a really cool recreation of a scene. Like at first I was like, why is he also doing the car? And I was like, oh, I guess he would have to make sure like everything else was right, because you know, you might be on, not that you couldn't check every floor of that building, but I mean, they could guess that it came from a building across the street.
Right. They
narrow it down a little bit, and they would like to have the evidence to bring to court later. So, but yeah, it was kind of a cool sort of evolution of this trick we've seen quite a few times.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah. And so following this evidence, Nick enters the office alone. No warrant. Like just...
I know.
No police presence with them. Just all... And obviously, like, yes, the understanding would be that the gunman is not still like hiding out there. It's been
very
some time.
Unlikely, yeah.
But still,
how many times have we made a big deal out of this in other episodes?
I just like, I literally was like flabbergasted. I was like, Nick, like no officers with you, no nothing. You just like waltz into this office and everything's just open. Like he could just waltz into this office building.
Yeah, presumably he'd have to like go over with an officer, say, you know, obviously the security guards would be aware there was a bank robbery across the street and they would like let him in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's none of that. They just are like, yeah, just head on in. So he, by his lonesome, goes into this office building and he finds the spot where the gunman was. He ends up wiping down a chair that has gun residue, you know, GSR on it. And that's basically his confirmation that they found where the gunman was.
I didn't get why he had to spray before and after every wipe, but he was.
It's all right. He's double spraying.
It was two chemicals, but they didn't have two bottles. It was like, I was trying to figure it out. I think it was just weirdly edited together.
Oh, that could be it for sure.
But it's kind of interesting. It's like checks the window. There's no residue there. Then he checks this chair, but he also moves this chair without gloves, I want to say, which
you might be right. You might be right.
Would have also had to move now twice because he both had to move it to the spot where he took the shot and they move it back to the spot where Nick then found it, because that was not where he took the shot from. But yeah, that was the sort of no gloves scene.
That was the no gloves scene from this.
He never dusted it for fingerprints, so it doesn't matter.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, those guys, there's a lot of reason why you would think you wouldn't need to do that, because those guys, you know, they are all sort of master whatever. The other thing they never did is check for security footage for this office building.
Nope.
Which presumably they have cameras in the lobby or somewhere.
Something. But they don't. We never see them following that avenue, at least. We then are with Grissom and Catherine. They walk into the lockbox room where Sarah has been. And we learn that the missing box, the targeted box, was number 729. We then have Grissom and Catherine waiting for the bank manager. And this is where Catherine confronts Grissom and is like, can you hear me? She's starting to be very, very suspicious about Grissom's recent behavior. But before he has a chance to come up with a retort for that, the bank manager comes in. We learn that the lessee of the box, of box 729, is a Benny Murdoch, and Catherine knows him. So we go back to San Bron. But this time Grissom does accompany Catherine. He doesn't let her go alone on this one. He's there. And we learn that Benny was essentially his right-hand man, essentially, at the Rampart. And we also learn that he died a few weeks ago of a brain aneurysm. And even with Grissom there, San Bron doesn't seem to have any issue with getting personal in the conversation. Yeah. Because he's tying Catherine into knowing Benny. And how she knows him is that he sent whales to her club when she was dancing. And
a great way, I love that this term comes up here because it's really like an old casino term.
Oh, whale.
Whale, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, at this time, didn't have this application. But in the world of video games, microtransactions, especially online like phone games,
mm-hmm.
whales are the people who spend the money in all these free-to-play games where you can buy time and coins and
yeah.
things. And they often, it's often this like sub 1% portion of the population that spends over 99% or, you know, of the money in this game. And it's like people who spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month on these games, and they prop the game up for everybody else to play. And that's why it's, they're all laid out that way. And I, you know, I always think of this term, and it's, I believe, a reference to like Moby Dick and the white whale.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean?
It's term, I think so.
You're chasing the whales because they pay the bills at the end, right? Or like a whale catch, even, like where it's like you get one whale and it pays for the whole crew for the whole season or something.
Yeah.
And I had never really thought about where it comes from. And I saw this used in this episode. I said, yeah, I guess casino is probably one of those places where you had like those original whales where these high rollers come in, you know, millionaires who can spend lots of money, you know, and they sort of like make it worthwhile at the end.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's kind of a cool term for it to come up here.
Yeah, so it comes up in this conversation. What also comes up in this conversation is that Sam and Benny had a falling out about 6 months ago. So that doesn't look great for Sam Braun.
I think they mentioned 6 months. I forgot to check this on the second watch through as when Catherine the first time when she said where the other murder was, because I think they're trying to like line up that timeline.
They're not. The other murder was 2 years ago.
Oh, did they say 2 years? The missing, like the unsolved murder or whatever?
2 years,
I thought the unsolved murder was referenced to this other murder tied to this. That's what I was trying to say earlier, was I first thought it was a callback.
Oh, no, they're not. Okay. No. So there's the murder that ends up playing a very crucial role in this episode was 2 years ago. The other one that Catherine was referencing was a year ago.
Oh, okay.
So it's like it's an unrelated one.
Yeah. Well, missed opportunity. They should have lined all those things up.
I agree. But they did not.
Maybe that's why I was like scratching my head. I was like, is that what she said before?
Yeah, you're like, wait a second. What's going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not quite what's happening. But I agree that there is an opportunity to take advantage of those timelines. We have Catherine approaching Greg Sanders, and she has an off the record request, which we'll come back to off the record requests in a wee bit.
I love this scene. It is in the wrong place of this episode.
It is in the wrong place of this episode.
I literally.
It should have been a later scene.
I mean, it has to be like two scenes later. It would have been fine. The next scene, right, is I think where they find the other part of this mystery. We'll come back to it.
Yeah, we'll come back to it. Yeah, we're almost there. So before we are though, Grissom wants a second opinion from Doc Robbins.
Oh yeah.
About his ear, and Doc Robbins is like, get the surgery ASAP. What are you doing? Like doctor to doctor, man. Like get the surgery.
I swear they talked about this in another episode. Maybe Grissom, like, obviously didn't get checked out by Doc Robbins, but maybe he didn't let him on to how far along it might be. But
maybe you might be right. I can't remember. This is where Grissom says, "Oh, he wasn't being rational," which I mentioned earlier in this recording. This is the scene where he's like, yeah, I know I wasn't being rational about this. So we then have the whole team. They're eating a meal together.
Chinese food.
And Catherine asks for Grissom's opinion on the case. And he is telling them that they're giving the robbers too much credit. They're obviously trained in like robbing. Yes. Like they know what's up. But when it comes to evidence, they're not. Like that is not their
Paul Molander.
They're no Paul Molander. So then there's, I guess it's fine, but there's this like weird, how does a fortune get inside a fortune cookie conversation? And Nick's like, oh, I know. And Sarah's like, oh, of course you do. And I will say that like from a character standpoint, I thought this was a nice moment. Like this was like a
old school Grissom.
It did feel a little old school Grissom, like just the posing, like, yeah, like giving a, essentially giving a riddle and then being like, that's the answer. And then he walks out and everyone's like, wait, what? Like, what are you talking about, Grissom? I don't know what you mean.
Not that many episodes. Nick was like, see, I would have known as a CSI one, I would try to answer this question, but I know that it's not about answering the question.
It's not about answering the question.
But Nick takes the bait and answers the question.
He does. He wants to prove that he knows what's up and he knows the answer.
But Grissom is making an allusion, I guess, is right, or to this notion that somebody had to put together
the detonator.
So yes. He leaves and he goes and looks at the detonator and finds it.
So that, exactly. So that transitions us to Grissom with one of the detonators. He opens it up. He finds a print inside. That print comes back to a Robert Rubio who, look at that, worked at the Rampart. So we then have a SWAT team storming a house. They clear it. This time, thankfully, Sarah doesn't run in and shot.
Those guys were very thorough.
They were very thorough.
You know, we're in like quote unquote cop killer territory here, right?
Yes.
This tends to be the level of response you get. Also, yes. The level of firepower those guys
were armed. They were heavily armed.
This is not one of those stories that makes the news where it's like the excessive use of force to serve a warrant. This is the appropriate reason why some towns have, you know, SWAT teams.
Yeah. So they clear the scene. And they say, hey, like, it's all clear, everything's good, but something is burning out back, which brings us to Jim Brass, Grissom, and Catherine. They're at a smoker. Grissom pulls out a black coat. He also pulls out lockbox 729, but don't worry, because it's fire resistant. So inside, they find a piece of fabric, maybe silk, as well as some blood. And so then
this is the thing where this evidence is like the scene with Greg should have come after
this.
This scene.
Yes.
And at first,
yes, I agree. We needed the blood first and then and then this.
And I call this out because I'm going to talk about it at the end of this episode. It's going to be the reason why I do something.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, we're not quite there yet. And we also learn in the scene, or we're getting further confirmation that everything is leading back to the Rampart. Like everything. Everybody has some connection back to this hotel. We then, staying with all roads lead to this hotel and Sam Braun, who happens to own this hotel. Sam Braun is in the middle of the desert with a briefcase, making an exchange. And then right afterwards, Jim Brass, Grissom, and Catherine are in the exact same spot. So, but now there's a triple homicide there.
So I have a spot the guest star.
Whoa. Okay, good. I don't have any spot the guest stars labeled this episode.
Only as bank robber number one.
Oh, man. We're like on a roll with our spot the guest stars. We've had bright girl. We've had girl. Bank robber number one. Yep. I'm loving it. All right. Who's bank robber number one?
Obviously, this bank robber would probably have been in an earlier scene, but first time we're seeing their face. One of the three bank robbers is played by Emilio Rivera.
Yes.
And Hispanic, you know, South American looking, big mustache. He plays a character called Marcus Alvarez in the show Sons of Anarchy, who is the head of the Mayans. And the Mayans are like the Latinx biker gang.
Okay.
They're in constant fighting opposition with the white, you know, pseudo, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, the word I'm looking for is basically Nazi, but the white nationalist.
I was going to say, I was like, oh, I kind of think I know what word you're looking for, but then I feel like that's not the word you want me to give. So
far down the river up front. But yeah, so he's like the head guy of the Mayans. He's in 31 episodes of Sons of Anarchy. Okay. All the time.
All right.
They're fighting, and then halfway through the show, they start becoming frenemies, and then they become friends. You know what I mean? Like
there's a bit
of stuff that goes on. In fact, there is another Sons of Anarchy. It's about the guest star. We had another episode who was like a land developer, and like that guy is the guy that brought them together because they both wanted, you know, he was going to destroy both of their you know, illegal criminal enterprises. But yeah, so it was so funny. I was like, wait, his classics about the guest star. I was like, wait a minute, I know that guy.
You're like, I know him.
I was like, I looked him up, bank robber number one. I was like, so good.
So sadly, he doesn't make it past this scene. He is now deceased, bank robber number one.
By the time I had confirmed it on IMDb, he was on the ground.
And so with this triple homicide, we are piecing together that the killer was actually the one that drove them there. Because there's no there's no cars. Like, they get there. Yep. It's not like there's like a car left there. Like, there's there's nothing there.
Out of focus in the scene before, they all get out of all the bank robbers get out of the car with Sam Braun on the other side. And the one person we will get to see them later in the episode. He's mm-hmm. like, they don't quite have him in focus. And I thought that was kind of, I don't know if it was how intentional this was, but I thought it was kind of neat.
Yeah, I like it.
It's like, because the mystery is still there. We still don't mm-hmm. 1,000% know, like, have the confirmation who this person is.
Yep. Yeah. In addition, a few other things happen here. We realize that they didn't get all their makeup off. So, like, it's almost guaranteed that these are our bank robbers. Grissom also finds a scarf. And that scarf matches the piece of fabric and also has a blood stain on it. So we're definitely going to have to investigate this scarf a wee bit.
I thought this was a no gloves Grissom moment.
I did too, but then he has the little metal clip clips.
Yeah.
I had the exact same. I was like, Grissom, don't you dare grab that scarf without gloves on. And then I was like, oh, he has the little pinchy. Yeah, I was like, okay, all right.
I don't think he has them in the behind shot. I think they fix it for the close up.
Oh, you could be right.
It's a little bit of mystery, like or mystery editing or...
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Somebody, like a PA ran in and said, wait.
Don't touch it without gloves. You gotta have something.
You weren't wearing gloves in the other shot. You can't have like the continuity error. Here are little tiny metal pincers. You almost never use them. You almost always would use a pen.
Yeah, but you're using little pincers in this scene. That's so funny. I had legitimately the exact same thought as you. We have a short scene with Bobby. He approaches Grissom in the hallway. Grissom just can't hear him and doesn't really seem to try to read his lips and hear him. He just kind of is tells him to, like,
slow down, but then he just keeps going and he just gives up.
Yeah, and so Bobby is left defeated. I did feel a little bad for Bobby in this scene. Grissom continues his walk, though. He goes into where Greg Sanders is, and we learn that the blood pulled from the lockbox there's two profiles in it. The primary one belongs to Vivian Verona, who was killed 2 years ago. The other one, we don't, you know, no match, could be the killer. During this exchange, Grissom realizes that Greg Sanders' hands are shaking, and he admits that they have been since the explosion. And Grissom, he does a lot of, like, not the best things in this episode. This was a really nice one. He's like, don't worry, it will stop. And, like, you can always come find me. Like, if you need me for anything, you let me know and you come find me. And I was Grissom,
I'm here for you.
Yeah, I was like, Grissom, that's really sweet. And I appreciate that. So Grissom is then looking over the crime scene photos of Vivian. Warwick enters with the scarf. As Warwick goes to cut the evidence bag that has the scarf, Grissom focuses in on the scissors that he's using. He takes the apple from Nick, who's very sad because he didn't get to have lunch.
He had half an apple.
But he had like half an apple. And Grissom stabs said apple with said scissors. And...
totally not necessary, by the way.
Not necessary at all. You could have just said, look at this. Doesn't it look like, doesn't the wounds on Vivian look like they were caused by scissors? But no, he wanted to give a visual representation of what he was seeing.
The apple's not making it to court. We're going to have to redo this experiment anyway.
We're going to have to redo this experiment for sure. And we also, this is where we also learn, or this is where Grissom proposes that it was a pair of scissors that were wrapped in the scarf. So what was used to kill Vivian was wrapped in this scarf. So we have Grissom, Warwick, and Nick. They're analyzing the blood pattern on the scarf. At some point, I think slightly apart, Catherine and Sarah enter. Sarah lets them know that Vivian worked for Sam Braun. And as they're analyzing the scissors, the blades of the scissors have letters on them, and there's enough letters for Catherine to realize that it is rampant.
It's a lot of computer magic happening.
A lot of computer magic.
I don't know. You want to use a computer to get the outline of a pair of scissors? Sure. There were like 9 drops of blood on that scarf. You were not getting letters.
Agreed.
It's a zoom and enhance powers here.
Yeah. This was definitely some.
They could have.
Some computer magic happened.
They could have just had a more bloody scarf and I would have believed it, but...
Yeah, but no, they wanted...
kind of like, wait, what?
They wanted to go fancy tech with it.
R-A-M... or R-A-M...
P-T-A-R-T, something like that.
Yeah, skipped a few letters. It's R-A-P-T skipped a few letters. P-T or something. Yeah.
We're with Catherine. She's in the locker room. She's going to go confront Sam Braun. She wants Grissom to come with her. Again, being responsible, and is like, hey, like, you should come with me to confront him. And he lets her know that he's not going to be able to join her because he's going in for surgery for his hearing loss.
Which is great.
Yes.
But also, are there not 3-4 other CSIs?
Or detective or Jim Brass.
Well, they're down an officer, so maybe Jim Brass is a little busy.
I mean, maybe, but this feels like your actions contributed to the death of a fellow officer. Although you would think that they'd want to be involved.
Sorry, what was it? Jim Brass to this exchange.
The way that he tends to respond. He does. He can be a little over the top sometimes. So we then do this. I will say it. I feel like we haven't had one of these in a while. Rubio gets perp walked through the station.
Yeah, we haven't.
Which again is understandable. Like, they think that he killed Detective Lockwood, so they want to make an example of him and they want to perp walk him through the station. But I was like, I feel like we haven't had a perp walk in a while.
He's pretty smug, which we're gonna have to get into in a second. But I have an unconfirmed theory about this.
Ooh, okay, okay. So Jim Brass is with Rubio in interrogation, and Jim Brass is essentially saying, like, hey, we got you. Like, you left some evidence behind. And have you ever heard this phrase before? So right before Jim Brass tells him that, he, as you were saying, he's kind of smug. Rubio's kind of like, I'm going to walk and, like, there's nothing. You don't have me, blah, blah, blah. And then he says, I'm looking forward to putting air in your head.
I assumed he means shooting a bullet.
That was my assumption. I was like, does that mean I'm threatening to shoot you? Which I feel like if they couldn't get you on this, can they not now get you for threatening a police officer?
I mean, that would be less important if my theory is true.
Okay. So what is your theory? I'm curious.
I think so. There's a whole thing with, like, you stop. How good is the ham sandwich at this diner? You were a mile away.
Yeah, you could have laughed. Why did you not, like, yeah, why weren't you further away?
I think it was on purpose. I think part of the deal was for him to get caught.
Oh,
to take the fall, to get this crime solved. Well, not take the fall, he did it. But, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, but for them to, like, have the person in custody and feel like...
And the thing that I don't get is, like, it almost felt like they were trying to set that up, but we don't get any confirmation of this. There's no... Mm-hmm. Family member, like, you know, end of the scene, like, flashback with him giving a back duffel of money to his daughter, or like, oh, turns out that Sam Rubio or whatever is Rubio is dying of terminal illness, or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So, like, yeah, so his family got a ton of money for him to take
some kind of thing that would make it make sense. Other, like, he's not just that, like, full. So, I do think he thought he was gonna get off. Like, I don't think this has weight. But I often wonder if it was once in the cards for this episode, and, you know, and either got lost in editing or something else, because you would need another event to happen for this to make any sense. But I do feel like the smugness, the sandwich, the why are we even talking about him stopping for a sandwich? I mean, other than to say, haha, we caught you, or maybe he's just so, like, cocky that it just turned out that way. But yeah, it almost felt like the intention was for him to get caught, because he could still cut a deal. I know he says, like, the whole idea is, like, he would be dead. He would get killed.
Yeah. So, Jim Brass wants him to give up Sam Braun. Essentially, he's like, your only bargaining chip here is to give up your boss, and then, like, maybe we can work something out with you. And he's like, otherwise you're getting death row. And Rubio is like, nope. I'm going to take death row because I'll live longer. So the thought being that Sam Braun is so powerful and so connected that if he were to give up Sam Braun, he would have him killed far quicker than it'll take for him to die on death row.
Now, here's the thing.
That's my take. That's, like, not clearly stated. That is my take on the situation.
You know, there's, like, Nevada death penalty because there was a whole execution episode.
Yes.
But they also, didn't they mention that it's, like, a federal crime? Like, because they robbed the federal bank or something?
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah.
There's also a federal death penalty as well. So he's potentially on 2 death rows.
Possibly. But he'd rather that than give up Sam Braun. But this is kind of a nice transition, because now we're with Catherine. She's with Sam Braun. And she's asking about the scissors. Because he has all the other scissors of all the openings of his hotel displayed in his office, but there's not the ones from the Rampart. So she's like, hey, like, where are they? And he's like, oh, they sold it like a silent auction, blah, like trying to play it off.
This didn't exist, but it reminds me of like YouTubers who have like 5 play buttons and they all display
them. Oh, yeah.
It's like they're, you know, they're accomplishments. They're like, or like people with like 6 degrees who always have.
Yeah, they just have
their diplomas on the wall.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And they sit down to talk. And after a bit of back and forth, he's claiming that Benny killed Vivian, and it's because he caught her cheating with him, with Braun. Catherine's like, no. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, why? Why would he, like, if he killed her, why would he keep the scissors and the scarf and put it in a lockbox? Like, that doesn't, and not clean it. That doesn't make any sense. And this is where we learn that the covert mission that Catherine gave Greg Sanders was to test her DNA against the blood that was pulled from the lockbox, which
they hadn't recovered yet.
Which they have not recovered yet. No, I agree. It is out of order. I agree entirely. Yeah. I thought this, I didn't think quite as much about it as you, but I did think that on the second, obviously not on the first watch through. On the second watch through, I was like, wait a second. You know, like, we don't have anything to compare it to yet. Really? Like, why is she asking for her DNA to be tested when there's nothing for it to be compared
and they don't
to?
Have his DNA. I actually had this moment where I went back and rewatched the first or that middle scene with Grissom. Because he had like a drink. Were they going to like steal his drink when he left the room to go down to his casino? Because there was, you know, somebody counting cards or something. But yeah, they didn't do any of that. And it wouldn't make a lot of sense because her monologue wouldn't make sense. I will say this line was set up, or this moment was set up very well earlier when Sam says something like, you know, you want the truth. And Catherine goes, now more than ever.
Yes.
Like, or something. And I was like, that's a really good line. When you realize the context of she's walking in there
knowing
this.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is revealed is that her DNA has 7 alleles in common with the DNA that was found in the lockbox, making Sam Braun her father.
Short science moment with Nick.
Yes.
I don't know who wrote this line. They don't know what they're talking about. Like, an allele is, like, the thing you describe, like, if you have blue eyes and you need a certain number of things to have, like, genes to have blue eyes, like, the allele is, like, the grouping of those genes, or it could be the individual genes themselves. So it's, like, you know, whatever the sequence of DNA is that encodes for this, that's an allele. So you have, I don't know what the number is, but it's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of alleles. So to say you have 7 in common is not that. I tried to figure this out.
Okay.
And I tried to like look at Wikipedia. I was like, is this a thing where it's
like a certain subset of the alleles?
Maybe that's true. And I just like, this is like such old ways in which we check DNA.
Yeah.
Cause like DNA has come a long way in 20 years.
Oh, for sure. Oh yeah. I mean, we can test.
So
DNA with like so much smaller samples and such now than we could 20 years ago.
We use this term SNPs now, which is where we like look for like strings of DNA. And so maybe that's really, you know, it's maybe just the way they used to check. At first I thought they meant chromosomes. I actually thought he was supposed to be her grandfather for like 5 minutes because you have like 27 chromosomes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so half your chromosomes are 13.
Yeah.
So you would get 13 from each parent, or half of each one from each. I don't know. I was like, it was supposed to be like half and half. Like, I still kind of thought they were off, but I thought maybe they were trying to get to something. I was like, well, half of 13 would be 6 or 7 or something. And then I was like, and then when she like confirmed like father, like she uses the term.
Yeah.
I was like, nope, I don't know what they're talking about.
You were like, I don't know what's happening here. Like, what is going on in this scene?
The point is to tell you that they share a bunch of DNA, and I don't know what I'm missing. Their goal is to tell you it's a father, but I think that let's pretend she said whatever she needed to say to make that true, because they could have done whatever test they needed to do to, like, Maury, you are not the father, you are the father
mom. right. So Catherine confronts him and tells him like no, like, you killed her, like, you're the one who killed her.
But he asked,
like, Benny covered
kill somebody, and she's like, the science says yes. So
yes. So this happens right after this. So she says, okay, like, she says, like, you killed him, Benny covered for you. And then his retort is like, oh, do you really think that I could murder someone? Like, do you really think that I'm a murderer? And this might be the title of our episode. Her response is, science tells me that you did.
Which such a great callback to all the Grissom.
Yes. I trust the science, follow the evidence.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, all those yes. So we don't end there, though. We kind of dim. This is, I didn't know how you were going to feel about this, and maybe you want to wait until we give our rating of it. But we don't have a solid conclusion. Like, she says that,
true.
You know, there's not like the solid wrap-up button on this one.
Yeah, that we'll get to there at the end.
Okay,
that has an impact on my rating.
Okay, that's fair. I just thought about it while I was watching it. But we don't end there. We have one final scene. Grissom's at the hospital. His room is being prepped for surgery. Catherine arrives, though, because she wants to see him and wish him good luck. And he thanks her and they hug. And then he forgoes the wheelchair and he walks off to the hospital room to get his surgery. And then that is the end of the episode. So, Nick, what are your thoughts on today's episode?
First things first, we were robbed of Grissom's butt.
I know. I thought the exact same thing. I love that our minds go to the same place sometimes. I was like, give me a little butt shot. Come on. Be risque here, CSI, and give us a little booty shot. Yeah, they denied us.
Term for those gowns that you wear in the hospital.
I think you just call them hospital gowns, right?
Yeah. I mean, they have like a
different place. Okay. I just always call them hospital gowns.
Yeah, they're open in the back. Like, half the reason you're usually on a bed or a wheelchair is because you're half naked walking down. Like, your entire backside is usually open.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
In those. And so it's sort of funny as he walks down. And I was like, I guess they can't. It's like, this is a national television.
It prime is. Time. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there could be a DVD extra.
Who knows? DVD, let us know, listeners. Do you know? Have you watched the director's cut and we get a little booty shot?
I forgot what they call. There's like a thing they, like, when you have to be naked on TV, they put your private part there, the little... Like,
oh, the blur or the box?
No, they're like garments they wear. They're called like merkins or something. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
It's to hide your bits so that nothing legally shows in case.
Yeah, okay.
There's a bad camera angle or something. It's to cover them. My thoughts on this episode, I gave it 4 out of 5.
Oh, okay. That's a surprise. Really, okay. I'm curious to hear why.
I kind of wanted to give it 4. I mean, I kind of wanted to give it 4.5.
Oh, okay.
But things like, not only do we not like get any closure in terms of like, you know, they tell us basically, and we all sort of knew at this point that Sam did it, right? You kind of get the story told.
Yeah.
But they don't even like address the elephant in the room, which is like, what are they going to do about it?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I would have loved Catherine to have a line that, you know, when he was like, oh, that's my legacy, that's my empire. And even saying something like, yeah, you're not going away we're not going to put you away for it, but every tabloid is going to publish a story about this. And your reputation is going with it, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Getting something, you know, just any sort of consequence for these actions, because what's he going to do? He's still around all of these happenings, you know, and they have quite a bit of evidence for it. They probably cannot subpoena his DNA, so they're probably never going to legally get that.
True.
So, I don't think he's a, you know, multimillionaire, presumably. So, I that hurt me. The other thing I really wanted at the end of this episode was I wanted Sarah to be there with Catherine at the end of the episode to support Grissom.
Fair.
I thought that
very,
would be,
very fair.
I just thought that would be like a very sort of interesting moment. She's not really in the episode much.
She's not.
She does the lockbox thing, which is a lot of time and energy. They don't really do the montage too much for it, but she doesn't have like a lot of like character moments. But I thought it'd be cool, like, Grissom wouldn't even have to know she's there. She could just be there, you know what I mean? Like, after mm-hmm. Grissom walks away, she could kind of like wander, you know, be around the corner or something, because she would care. And the idea that Catherine would know enough to tell her, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
because she sort of can like see through the facade that Grissom is putting up. That would have been cool. Something like that I think would have pushed it over. But it was a fun, it was a good episode. I thought that it was paced well. And I almost like got sick and tired of the Grissom sound thing, because
it was very heavy handed this episode.
It was so sparsely sprinkled out throughout the season. And then just be.
And then they were like, oh, we need to like really. Yeah, like we need to like really put it on display for this episode.
They could have ramped up to it, I think, a bit more in the last few episodes.
So I agree.
Sort of like sell that it's spiraling out of control or something.
Yeah.
That also like held the episode back a little bit, but yeah, no, I like the episode. So I was not going to give it a replay. I was going to give it a play.
Yep.
And then on the second watch, that scene with Greg, I was like, oh, I didn't get that. And it was like such a great moment where I was like, and then when I realized they didn't have the lockbox yet, I threw up my hands and said, what are you doing?
You're like, no, come on. This could have been so good.
That scene doesn't work anymore because you didn't have the evidence yet. And I was like, all it is order of operations. And I went and I scribbled and I scrapped. So first I was play and then I made it replay. And then I went back to play.
You're like, no, this was ruined. This replay was ruined by this one order of scenes.
So the secret is P's and R's are very similar. So if I like the episode the first time through, it's a play. And then if I'm rewatching the episode, if something about rewatching the episode makes me go, man, I'm so glad I rewatched this episode, it basically becomes a replay. I usually kind of like wait for that to happen organically while I'm watching the episode, being like, this episode was definitely worth a second watch. Doesn't have to be a singular scene like that. Sometimes it's just like, that was good to watch again. At the end, I'll make it a replay. And this time I was like, oh yeah, that was really good. I'll make a replay. And then like two scenes later, I was like, wait, what? How would you have ever known what the scene was about? I downvoted it again. So we're back to just a normal. There's just, this episode could have been a five. This episode was just a couple little things. This could have been a five. And they didn't have to get Sam. I know, like, I do like the closure, but like, they just needed to do something else with that story. They just kind of left you in the wings.
Mm-hmm.
And Catherine's whole final visit is kind of unofficial.
Yes.
You know, so it's like, mm-hmm. What's going on with that case? We also don't get to see what goes on. I know, season finale, cliffhangery, I guess. But like, it's not like, I don't know. The way they treat Grissom's surgery, they make it sound like he's going in to have his heart replaced.
I know, for like, yeah, like removing like a brain tumor or something.
I feel like today, and you know, I feel like today this surgery would be considered minor. But maybe it's more complicated than I think, but they don't bring us down that path. So I don't know. Yeah, it was a good episode though. I would say... perfectly great episode. I don't know if it's the best season finale episode, but I also feel bad for the actor who played Detective Cyrus Lockwood. Hopefully because he got another job.
I hope so. I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, I hope like it was just because he had other commitments and he couldn't like commit to the schedule anymore because he had other things he needed to do.
We'll have to see. Maybe they don't want him to get
it. Because I will admit, syndication
money.
I don't remember that this happened to Lockwood. I did know that he's not in most seasons.
Okay.
Like when we started rewatching, I was like, oh yeah. I was like, you're not in most seasons, but I didn't remember why he wasn't in most seasons. So I still was like, oh, I was like, Detective Lockwood, I forgot this happened.
I didn't think he was dead at first. I just thought he was going to be injured. Oh, I bet he's wearing his bulletproof vest. You know?
Nope, we lost.
There was some blood.
We lost Lockwood, sadly. So I give this episode a 3.5. There's quite a bit that I like about it. There's not, other than Grissom's like hearing loss, I guess Catherine's relationship with Sam Braun. So there is like good character development, but not, I feel like not as much as like I feel like last episode was like really, really heavy and I was like spoiled. And so it didn't feel quite as impactful with this one. And there was like a few like nice how they interacted with each other moments, which I appreciated. I also agree. The out of order scene really, really bothered me. Okay. On the second watch through, I was like, wait, no, this is not time. You're not right. There's nothing to compare it to. Why are you asking him to do this when there's nothing to compare it to?
It's so disappointing because it's otherwise such a great example of when they do it well.
Yes.
And I gotta blame the editor on this one.
It just needed to be like two scenes later, just a little while later. That stuck out with me. And yeah, I feel like, and again, I get that this was a Grissom Catherine heavy story, like focused story, and that's fine, but I don't like when the other characters are sort of just like there, and that's what it felt like. Yeah, it was like everyone else was just kind of like there,
especially in a season finale.
Especially
one of the reasons why I was like, this is not a great season finale episode, because like,
no, because everyone else was just there. And to continue your point, they were just so heavy-handed with Grissom's hearing loss in this episode, and this is in the time where there are 23 episodes in a season. You had plenty of time. And it to was build like... up to the hearing loss. And it was like, oh, in like a few episodes, it was like hinted at and twice. Like yeah. once or twice. And then suddenly the season finale, it's like, oh, huge, huge deal. Like can't a problem all the anything. Time. Can't hear anything. And I will also admit, just, you know, I like to be forthright with the audience here. I had a rough go yesterday. I had a bit of a rough time yesterday. And so I was still like stressed out today. So the second watch through wasn't a great watch through. And was it not a great watch through? Because it just overall wasn't a good watch through, or because I was stressed out. I don't know.
I'll tell you what.
I'm not sure.
Good enough to pull you back up by your bootstraps. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
To relieve some of it. Wasn't a great distressor. You
know? It was not a great distressor. That is true. So, yeah, 3.5. Pretty good. I think I am also judging it more harshly because it's a season finale. And I have certain expectations for what a season finale is going to be, and I feel like this did not deliver. And so I think I'm being harsher than I would be if this was like an episode 12 that we were reviewing.
I gotta tell you, we're three seasons in, three season finales down. I don't even know if I could tell you what the second season finale is, but in my brain, I do not think of this show as having good season finales. Because the first season was like Paul Molander's empty warehouse.
Oh, was it?
And then we didn't get like, and then like,
and then we didn't come back to Paul Molander for like seven episodes.
Yeah. It was like a non-starter at the start of the season. I was like, what? Okay. I was like, all right, first season of a show. You've grown an audience. You can't, we need to move on so that all the new people watching the show are caught up. I was like, let it go. And then I don't really remember what happened. I think the end of last season was just like when we first had like Grissom talk about his hearing loss or something.
I think so.
And that was it. And then for it to basically just be a D plot in a few episodes.
Yeah.
And then for it to be like the B plot in this episode, it was just kind of like poorly arrived at. So yeah, I think we'll have to see. I'm not going to condemn the entire series.
Yeah.
But overall, I would say so far, the show has not done a great job with the season finales.
We'll see in 23 episodes how we feel about the end of season 4. But before then, we will return next week with season 4, episode 1, Assume Nothing. In the meantime, you can support us on Patreon by searching for Who Are You? / a CSI podcast. You can also find us on Facebook the same way. We are also on Twitter /X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Who Are You? CSI Pod. We also have a website, whoareyoucsipod.com. And also, This episode will be released December 30th. So happy New Year, listeners. Thank you for hanging out with us for another year. We look forward to 2025 with you. And if you haven't already, it would be awesome if you could rate us on your podcast app of choice. If you can leave us a review, that is wonderful. It like really helps with getting the word out on our podcast. So yeah, we really appreciate all of you. Thanks for hanging out with us another year, and here's to 2025.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.